All right, well, let's start off a little bit and kind of recap some of the last few weeks as we've started this study. We've had we've seen the announcement of, first and foremost, John the Baptist and his birth, and what was going. And we'll talk more about this, but just starting off, what is going to be John's role? Preparing the way for the Lord, right? And we see him; he's actually born into the world first. We taught he's maybe 3 months or so older than Jesus. So I mean, they're right there together. But he's born into the world first, and then after him, Jesus comes into the world. And as we've covered the last 2 weeks, he had a very uneventful birth, so to speak, for the Lord and Savior of the world. I mean, think about the circumstances under which he was born under. He was not, you know, heralded in as a king's child would be, but just as a carpenter's son, being the son of Joseph. So so we've seen that occur. As Jason discussed last week, right out of the gate, though, his life was threatened. How was it threatened? That's right. That's right. And how was Jesus able to escape that being under the age of two? Yep, that's right. So they did flee to Egypt and stayed there until at what point in time? Yep, that's right. So let's pick up this morning in Luke chapter 2. Luke chapter 2. This first part, as we talk about the childhood of Jesus, we'll be looking at verses 40 through 42. Let's start here with looking at just verse 40. And the child grew and became strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. So in this very short verse, we sum up everything that we've read and have from the time that Joseph and his family came back from Egypt till, as we'll read in verse 41 or verse 42, till 12 years old. So we've covered several years worth of time. But what does it say about Jesus during this time? Grew up like anyone else. And remember, let's recall, what did we say about Luke's standpoint of really kind of what he focused on in talking about Jesus in his gospel? And what does this speak to? His deity? I think that one was more towards John. Luke was more on the humanity. Luke focused more on Christ as a person. And I think that's what this is speaking to here, is that we see Christ growing up like any other Jewish boy would. That's what it says. He grew up. What else does it say about him, though? Yeah, that's right. He became strong in spirit. That's right. And what else? There's one other thing before that. Filled with wisdom. All right, just we've talked about this, I know, in many other classes. What is wisdom? Yeah, that's right. So you can have all the knowledge in the world, but if you don't know how to use it, what's it really worth? So, but here we see Jesus is filled with wisdom, and that the grace of God was upon him. How do we define grace? That's right. So is Jesus getting unmerited favor? Right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right. And I think this kind of goes as well with the first two, becoming strong in the spirit and being filled with wisdom. And we'll see this here in a moment. Just, you know, how many 12-year-olds are going to be moving, you know, trying to do that? I know I wasn't. That wasn't my main objective growing up. But, you know, I'm certainly not the Lord. And that's what, and I think that's where all that kind of wraps up into that favor be upon him, and that he knew early on that he was here for a specific role, and we'll talk about that as we move into the rest of this section. All right, so let's read verses 41 through 51. Jason, you mind reading that for us, please? All right, so let's remind ourselves a few things about the law. What three feasts were Jewish males required to appear before the Lord? All right, so the Passover, you'd have the Feast of Unleavened Bread that followed it, the Feast of Harvest, and then the Feast of Ingathering. I think all those are all the same ones. All right. Let's turn over to Exodus 23 and just see where that command is given. Exodus 23. Randy, will you read verses 14 through 17, please? Yeah, through 17. So those are the three times that the Jewish males are supposed to appear before God, and Joseph being, as we've talked about before, the devout person that he is keeping those in accordance with the law of Moses. And we see them coming here to the for the Feast of the Passover. Now, what does the Feast of the Passover remember? Right, and specifically that night when the angel of the Lord passed through the land and killed all the firstborn except for those that were in the homes that had the blood of the lamb sprinkled on the doorpost. So it was, and it was after that that finally Pharaoh let Israel leave Egypt. And the leaving of Egypt, how was that? I mean, what did they just pick up and leave, and that's all they had? What else happened that night? Yeah, so without having to raise the first sword or anything, they plundered Egypt. And they left out that night, fulfilling really kind of the word that God had told them, that they're going to be leaving. They weren't going out empty-handed, and they were going to be a great nation. And they started by, you know, really taking a lot of the goods from the greatest nation at that time. Yep, there you go. There you go. So this was a very important day for them, because it was also in, it started their first month of the year. And when was Passover actually celebrated? What day of the month of that month was it on? Right, the 14th day. So how long were Mary, Joseph, and Jesus in Jerusalem for Passover? Right, 8 days minimum. As we just said, they killed the Passover lamb on the 14th day. And then they began the Feast of Unleavened Bread on the 15th day, and it lasted 7 days. So once this feast was finished, the family traveled back to Nazareth, and they went with a very large company of people. Did anybody happen to look up just kind of roughly how long that journey was, how many miles that was? Oh, it was, if you look it up, and I kind of looked on the map, especially how they were going to go, it's more in the neighborhood of 90 miles, somewhere in that time frame, because they wouldn't go necessarily as a crow flies. Why is that? Very mountainous terrain. And what lies between Jerusalem and Nazareth? What area? Samaria, and yeah. So, any, let's call it, good Jew, would they go through Samaria? Would they want to travel through Samaria? Right. So, it's a long route. It's not a direct, you know, direct walk. So, 90 miles. That's a fair little hike, because they're not necessarily. You know, they're not like us and have the ability to travel by cars, you know. Yeah. So, it's not a long journey, and, you know, let's think about that path and security. Who else lives in those mountainous areas that would be kind of watching how things are and people traveling through? Robbers and thieves. There was not necessarily the law enforcement like we have and the ability to call them in as readily as we have today for help. So if you're traveling alone, you're more likely and susceptible to those things, whereas if you're part of a big company, yes, they may still try to come and overpower you, but the odds of it are a lot less. So that's why you would travel at this time in those big caravans, so to speak, of people going back and forth. And as part of this, as we read, there were both relatives and acquaintances that were all in this band, so it wasn't people that they didn't know. It wasn't necessarily complete strangers. They had an idea of who everybody was, and that would include Jesus. He would have known these people, these relatives of theirs, these acquaintances that they had. So it wasn't like they were just traveling with a complete band of strangers. All right, so we continue on a day's journey out. Mary and Joseph begin looking for Jesus, probably have settled down and, you know, getting the family unit back together for the evening, and they don't find him. He's not among the group. So when they didn't find him among the group, what did they do right then and there? They go back to Jerusalem. And they search for him for 3 days, and they finally find him in the temple. All right, so I'm not going to ask for a raised show of hands, but how many have either been lost or have lost a child? I'll raise my hand. I've done that. My mom tells the story of me in service merchandise with my grandmother, and that's always a fun story to hear. What is going through your mind as a parent? Panic. I mean, you're just, where is this? And why is that? Why is there panic? Yeah, it's the unknown for this person that you are responsible for. You are the parent. It is your responsibility to care for this child. Yeah, that's right. Right. Even at 12, I mean, he's 12. I mean, and I guess it's more so prevalent today because of the news cycle and everything, but, you know, it's getting almost every week we're seeing stuff come up about missing kids. I mean, sometimes it's almost 2 or 3 times a week that the Amber Alert goes off where we see something happen. I mean, just last week there was a 16-year-old abducted in Pelham, found her in Huntsville. I mean, you know, we see more and more of that. And we see more of that because it's more televised. It's more out there. But it's the same at this time as well. It's just not, you know, it doesn't get out because you don't have the news networks like we do today. But, you know, the situation's still the same. People are going to could take advantage of kids for whatever reason. I mean, this is nothing new. Solomon says there's nothing new under the sun. It's just we know more about it today because of because of news media. That's right. And we'll get to a little bit of that here in just a second. So they find him in the temple. Okay, well, that's a pretty good place to find a child. What is he doing? What is Jesus doing while he's there in the temple? Yep. There you go. He's listening to him. He's asking them questions. Now, the book points out that within the temple area itself, you had 3 synagogues. You had one at the gate of the court of the Gentiles. the southeast part of the inner court and the entrance to the court of the Israelites. As we talked last quarter, what was the purpose of these synagogues? Right, it was a place for them to gather, to learn about the law, especially, you know, as we talked last quarter, it began while they were dispersed over in Babylon and throughout the world especially. And as they came back, they still brought these centers for learning and for teaching. So we have these three. We're not told that Jesus was in any of those. We're just told that he was in the temple. But there would be, you know, odds are there was a good chance somewhere in there was teaching going on, and Jesus was able to sit in the midst of those that were teaching, being able to listen to them and to ask them questions. And as all this is going on, as Mary and Joseph find him, what is the reaction of those that heard him? Yeah, that's right. They were astonished at his understanding and answers. So what does that really kind of imply as well? Not only was he listening and asking questions, but what else was he doing? Right. As a 12-year-old boy, he's answering them back on questions that they might be asking him. So now I'll ask this question, and I already know my answer. How many 12-year-olds do you know that could sit amongst a group of adult men and be able, especially, you know, leaders and teachers of the law, and be able to converse and astonish everybody? I know I wasn't. There's no way I could have done that. I know growing up I was very timid about going up in front of people and so forth. But here's Jesus sitting amongst these leaders and carrying on rational conversation with them, asking them questions, being able to give answers to questions they may have. I mean, this is truly amazing. And for these people, seeing that, you know, the reaction they give is right, being astonished at what he's able to do at such a young age.
This is the word that no question is
not. Yeah, that's exactly right. Right, but there is one difference, and we kind of alluded to this. As a 12-year-old boy, does he pose a threat to them?
No, he doesn't try.
He doesn't try, but he also doesn't necessarily try, you know, so to speak, later on. But he's not that threat to them. So they're just, so when that threat is not there, they see it for what he's doing. Whereas later on, as they start to see the multitudes, they start to see people drawn away from them, that's when they see that threat, and that's when they start, oh, this has got to stop. We got to put an end to this. Because if we don't, you know, we're out of business, so to speak. And we'll talk about that as we go more through the life of Christ and through everything that he goes through. But it is very interesting, you know, and again, we're here at 12 years old, this is happening. By the time he's 30 and he starts his ministry, you know, a lot of these people are may very well hear this again. But as Rex said, their attitude is going to be go away from being astonished and go to being, this is threatening us, this is threatening our livelihood. And we'll definitely touch more about that as we go through. All right, as we've kind of alluded to, as we've gone through this, has Mary and Joseph done anything that any parent in here would not have done? I mean, would you have just gone on back to Nazareth? Oh, he's God's son. He'll take care of himself. No, they... Yeah, and, you know, and by this time, they probably would have more. Oh, we've got more to spare. We'll just head on back. No, they drop everything, a day's journey out, and they go back by themselves, as we talked about. It's not exactly the safest thing for them to do. But they go back to Jerusalem, and they search for 3 days looking for him. And finally find him in the temple. And finding him and seeing him, Mary questions him. Son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously. Is that a reasonable question for Mary to ask Jesus? Yeah. I mean, you know, I know I've been asked that on numerous occasions that when I was found. You know, just the anxiety and then finally having that relief. But you're still, your adrenaline's still kicked up, still going. And it's, you know, wanting to know, why did you do this to us? What was the reasoning for this? Yeah, what were you thinking? I heard that numerous times. Jesus simply responds back, why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my Father's work? So it's a very interesting, I don't want to say play on words, but just how Father is used by Mary and then by Jesus. Who is Mary referring to when she says, your father and I sought you anxiously? Joseph. Who is Jesus referring to when he says, I must be about my Father's business? Right. So, do you think in this instance, Mary forgot exactly where Jesus came from? How he was conceived? I don't think she ever did either. Right. There we go. That panic has really set in. And
Jesus is the only 12-year-old boy that can say this.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, any 12-year-old boy that had not told their parents where they were or what they were going to do, they would be in trouble. But obviously, Jesus is the first body. This is just a part of him and his spiritual relationship that he has with his spiritual
I agree with that completely. Yeah, and it's that bit of unknowing, you know, and you have this happen, you know where he came from, you know how special, you've been told how special he is going to be and who he is, and yet, you know, even early on in his life, who has that earthly responsibility for him? Mary and Joseph. So they've been entrusted with that. So I'll just ask this. Do you think it was wrong for Mary to ask this question of Jesus? No. I don't either. And I know the book brings out that it sounds like a slight reproach against Jesus or a rebuke. And I really don't see it. I see it as a concerned parent doing what they're supposed to, you know, doing what any concerned parent should be doing. Agree with that completely.
So to follow up on that, I think some of our question about the Mary's confusion, why did you see that? How is it solved? It's not. It's easy to take the lead if not telling them, why are you worried about this? Why are you concerned about this? Oh, that's not what I'm saying. It's like, why did it take them 3 days to figure out where they were going to find me?
I think it's. I really do think that's a very good thought, because we'll see that more, especially in as Jesus begins his ministry, where he is when his. We'll have the example when his family comes looking for him. And again, this will kind of pan out, Randy. Yeah, that's right. You know, and as we're reading this here in Luke, and as I was preparing it, it just kept coming into my mind. You know, we talked about Luke investigating these matters, you know, possibly kind of interviewing these people. And if he was interviewing Mary, it kind of makes you wonder, what question did Luke ask to get this story out of her? I mean, you know, something like, well, tell me a time that really struck you in Jesus's childhood. Tell me a little bit about his childhood. And she comes right to this, because Luke's the only one that records this, as we'll see here in a few minutes. Matthew talks about the birth of Christ and then going to Egypt, and then the next place he picks up is going to be in, talking about John the Baptist. Mark picks up with John the Baptist, and John picks up a little later than that as well. So Luke's really the only one that records a lot about Jesus' childhood in any shape, form, or fashion. But it's just interesting to think about, you know, how did he get this, if this is how he got it, how did he get this out of Mary? How did this story come up? And what was that question to get this? So it's just, you know, interesting to think about that Mary, you know, as it says here, Mary kept all these things in her heart. We read that several times. We'll see that several times as we go through Jesus' life, as he has his interactions with Mary and the things that she sees and how that's kept in her heart.
Spirit clearly could give us that last phrase.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring that up, because this is really kind of the last place that we see Joseph mentioned in the narrative as we talk about Jesus, is this incident, when he's found in the temple. And we see as he's referred to and talked about, you know, he takes up his father's livelihood. So he had to have time to be taught that trade as well. So we know he's there. We know Joseph is still in his life. We just don't know how long that is. But this is just really the last instance of when that we have reference back to Joseph. All right, verse 52, and Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and with men. So from here to the point where we're brought back to our narrative with Jesus again, what is said about him that he does from 12 until the next time we see him? Yep, that's right. That's where I was going. Just, we talked about even before that he was finding favor with God. That's what Luke wrote. We see that in his wisdom, being able to converse. But even afterwards, he's still increasing in that, but as well as with men. How is he going to be known later on in his ministry? Is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph? We've seen him around. We know him. So he's not necessarily, you know, off by himself. You know, he's well known among the people there in Nazareth, who he is, his family and lineage. Go ahead, Rex. Grows up a common person. He's a carpenter, a laborer by trade. So he's always doing stuff for other people. I mean, that's the job of a carpenter. You know, that's the job of a laborer. You're doing stuff for other people. You know, and that is his divine nature as well. He's a servant. And we'll see that later on, that he's more than just, you know, a good back to tote things around and to build things. You know, he's a servant for all men in going before God. Yeah, exactly. All right. All right, so now we're going to get into where we start to have a lot more commonality in passages talking really about the same event as we go through, as we're looking at the harmony of the Gospels. This next section is going to talk about John the Baptist and his beginning of his work. It's going to encompass Matthew chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, Mark 1, 1 through 6, and Luke 3, 1, 1 through 6. What I want to do is let's read Luke's account to start with here. Rex, do you mind reading that? Luke 3, 1 through 6, please.
Now, in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, Pontius Pilate became governor of the
All right, so in all of these, Luke sets the time for us. It's the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar. Pontius Pilate is the governor of Judea. Herod, and this is Antipas, is tetrarch of Galilee. Philip is tetrarch of Iturea. And Rex, you did such a good job. Pronounce that. No. Iturea and Trachonitis. Thank you. And then Lysanias is tetrarch of Abilene. Just kind of show you where these areas are. Pilate is the governor, so he's that area that's under Roman rule, right through here, includes parts of Samaria as well. And it does reach over to Decapolis. I just didn't put that on here. Herod is over Galilee. Is this area here, and he also has rule over the area of Perea as well. Philip, his half-brother, is up here. There's Iturea is, I'm sorry, I can't see it this morning. I think he's right there. Trachonitis is right there. I love these words. All right, and then, of course, yeah, and I took it in high school, so you would think I would be better at it. And then Lysanias is Abilene, which is this area up here, part of the province of Syria. So it kind of gives you an idea of where these rulers, and please forgive me for my rough sketching. It's not exactly easy to do with a mouse, so to speak. But as best I could, this is kind of how it plays out. That's right. And then even during that, here from the Tetrarchs, who do all those really descend from? Herod the Great. So it was through the Hasmoneans, and then Herod taking, being able to come in there, that you have the Tetrarchs set up. You have Rome controls the important part, because Jerusalem is in this area. Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, so real quick, as we finish up this morning, we have Annas and Caiaphas were high priests. How do we have two high priests? I thought there could only be one. There you go. One's true, one's political. Which one's true? Right, Annas was the correct one, and Caiaphas was the one that was appointed after Gratus deposed Annas. But we still see Annas having some say and some influence, because we see that especially on the night that Jesus was taken and tried. Where does he first go? He first goes to Annas, right? The house of Annas, and then goes to Caiaphas and all the council. So we still see that playing out for quite some time. So the time frame for this, from the material that Rex handed out, is 25 to 27 A.D. In that time frame when John begins his ministry, and his ministry is starting to flourish. So where is he preaching? Right, the wilderness of Judea, and you'll see it on here. This real hilly country up here, comes in Jordan, but a lot around the Dead Sea, and they call it a wilderness for a reason. You can see that's what it looks like. When we think of wilderness, we think of trees and the great forest of the Northwest. That's not how it's used in these times. It is a very desolate place. Right, stone, rocky, not a lot of vegetation growing there, not a lot of inhabitants, especially there around the Dead Sea as well. I mean, you know, it's called the Dead Sea for a reason. All right, so we'll pick up here and we'll begin looking at the beginning of John the Baptist and his work, his ministry, and what and how he is, as we've read, preparing the way for the Lord.
Good right there. No, I haven't felt bad or anything. I don't have any symptoms or anything. I started taking Tamiflu myself. I got a prescription for it, just a precautionary.
You made her go to the doctor.
What?
So you made her go to the doctor is what I heard.
Well, yeah, between her and Eileen and I, you know, well, between me and Eileen, you know, we, I figured you'd appreciate that since she was going to be in, close quarters with wife and mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
I figured that you would probably appreciate that.
I do appreciate that. I know Jarell appreciates it.
And to answer the question that you sent me while I was in the woods yesterday, it's harder now for Beth to get that facility. So what she and I did talk about was, you know, given the size of our group and how many people actually come, we can do it at our house.
Okay.
Be happy to do that.